Episode 239.
Getting trust from their customer. They're keeping the customers. They're building a history with the customer. And because they're doing all that, they're going to be successful to the customer and they're going to have higher return on the repair orders.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarket professionals, to episode 239 of Remarkable Results Radio with my guest, John Burkhauser, Director of Educational Programs at Bolt-On Technology. I'm Carm Capriano, changing the behavior of how aftermarket professionals get their daily insights through this powerful digital medium. This episode is presented by Federal Mogul Motor Parts, and they are the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seidel Power, FP Diesel, and more. Now you know they're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com, and thank you for your support of these brands. I hope you get a chance to visit the episode show notes that are created for every guest. They get their own page with interview talking points and additional bio information. You can find this week's show notes with John Burkhauser at remarkableresults.biz/E239. Hey, thanks for your support and being a faithful listener and a fan of the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Keep in mind, you have listening choices. The show is on most all top and popular podcast digital broadcast sites. And you could also find my own app on your iOS or Android platform. Just search for Remarkable Results Radio. Are you connected to the podcast socially? Well, you can find all my social connection links at remarkableresults.biz/social. And when you have the urge to send me an email, it's carm@remarkableresults.biz. Hey, a shout out to my new LinkedIn connections, Dennis Welvert, Tim McDonald, and Richard Wolf. Welcome. And to recent Facebook friends, Eddie Cleveland, Kenneth Brown, Stephanie Savine, and Bill Bowling. Hey, I've just hung out my speaker's shingle. If you have an organization in need of a speaker to bring the pulse of the aftermarket to their next conference, just go to carmspeaks.com. There you'll find all about the three different speaking formats, my bio, and the media kit download. Now meet John Burkhauser. John is a former automotive tech, post-secondary instructor, and now the director of educational programs for Bolt-On Technology. John and I get into his time as a technician, his tenure as an instructor, and his view on how to recruit for new talent at automotive colleges. We get into best practices, setting future appointments in the new digital world, how digital vehicle inspections integrates into a shop, and as you've come to expect, a lot more nuggets of wisdom. Now, here is the interview with John Burkhauser. Nice to be with John Burkhauser, Director of Educational Programs for Bolt-On Technology. Welcome, John.
Hey, Carm, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on board.
Besides working at Bolt-On, is you were a tech for 20 years, and the part that I find really fascinating, a tech doesn't make you no slouch, but that you went on to teach in post-secondary for 10 years.
It was the greatest thing because all my life, people have told me that I have a teacher's attitude. I used to teach life-saving for the Red Cross and all sorts of things. But then I also, when I was working in the shop, I wound up being the guy that would bring in the new techs and whatnot and show them how to do things. So I took all that and said, "No, what? Why don't I become a teacher? Because everyone says I should be." So things happened in such a way, boom, I was a teacher.
And did you love it, like it? Were you passionate for it?
Oh, I was passionate because you know what? I couldn't walk into a classroom without having hours and hours of pre-set up stuff. I wanted to go in there full barrels, everything, because I have a student group of students that really need to be engaged. And I knew that if I was up there going, they're not going to stay with me. So my goal was I did lots of hours. My first year or so, I would do 2 or 3 hours a night taking care of the next day's class.
Preparation.
Yeah, you have to, because I've seen people fail because they don't prepare.
Speaking to a few educators, and I have interviewed a bunch, and anyone can go to the website and look at the series, the educator series, and listen to these former and current teachers. They're saying lately that there's an awful lot of admin and politics in this today. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. The government's been kind of tough on some of these schools, and there's reason for that. But also, what's happening in the schools with the administration and things of this sort makes you question what's important here, learning or did we just get them through a day? And you know, that's part of what made me kind of make the move to where I am now, because I'm saying to myself, I'm trying to teach, but they keep limiting what I'm allowed to do. They keep telling me that you got to do this, you got to keep them all awake and stuff like that, and you got to get everybody involved. But when you start looking at some of the students coming in and how you have to approach them as a group, you have three separate groups. You have the students that are basically the cream of the crop that they want to absorb everything you can give. You got the ones in the middle that can go either way. And then you got the bottom that I call them the parkers. They're just sitting in parking lots for the time being. And they're the ones that you're always fighting with, keeping awake and stuff like that. So if an administrator would come down a hallway and look in and see any heads down, I'm immediately in trouble. And that's a real tough thing, because I have these students that want to learn. They're waiting for that learning, but yet I have to fuss with these people that are not there. They're just parking.
Is part of your responsibility to get the parkers educated?
Yeah, and I did everything that I could to get the parkers interested. I taught electrical, so I did a lot of experiments, which really woke a lot of people up, and I had a lot of great results from that. Matter of fact, the sleepers, we got an old fuse box that, you know, we had all the variety of fuses in it. You buy it in the store and you get like 100 fuses. Well, I actually gave that to a couple of the students and said, look, here's a buzzer, here's a switch, here's wires, here's your batteries. I want you to make a device that when someone falls asleep, it buzzes. They have to hold it to keep it from buzzing. And the students are like, what? So as soon as they got into that and started working on it, voila, the next thing is people were dying to be the one holding the buttons. Because now no one wanted to sleep, and if someone sleeps, then it go over to him. It had dead man switch on it, basically. And it was it. But it's proved not to be enough. So the next step, we were always taking electrical things apart, because electricity is the same no matter where it's at. But you know the jump battery packs that they have? They have some of those with fluorescent lights on it. Well, the battery pack was shot, but I looked at the fluorescent light. So I took a voltage reading. Wow, that's 150 volts. The student said, wow, wouldn't that be the greatest wake-up device? And I said, oh, boy. We actually made it work where it had, again, dead buttons that if you let go, they engage the circuit and you get a shock.
That's what you were looking for, some ingenuity, right?
Yeah, and again, students would stay awake just because they wanted to be the one holding that box.
And that becomes the talent of the teacher to do what your heart's intending you to do, and that is to transfer knowledge. And I guess you can't when they're sleepers. So while we're on the subject of education, engagement of the good students out into the industry, I'm sure as a trainer, you were engaged with the dealerships. But, you know, I'm so passionate for the quote-unquote independent side of the business. Many independents come to your school to recruit, or did you ever help them?
Well, we try to get the independents in there on a regular basis so that they can see our students and take a tour of the facility. As a matter of fact, because our certifications, twice a year we had to have an event where we brought a lot of people in, and we mostly try to get independents to come in to see how our program's going. They would check over what we're teaching and see if it would have fit when the students left. So yeah, the dealers, though, are a lot harder knocking on the door than the independents. So what I wound up doing is in the area that I live in, I was not far from school where I lived, I got to know a lot of the managers. And then when we had class trips, I go up, there's a student you got to talk to. And I would even have some of them, if they wanted to, bring their resume with them. And I said, these are the guys that you want to talk to. This is the young lady that you want to talk to. The rest of them, we'll just do the tour, but I think I got some good people for you.
So it's important that anyone in the industry that's looking to farm a technician, to grow a technician, to bring on a quote-unquote C-Tech, getting to know the administration, getting to know the department head, getting to know the teacher, or all of the above?
I think the teacher to the shop is the most important link, because sometimes you're not supposed to say certain things or allude to certain things. So that's why I always try to be very careful of how I did it. I never want to say anything negative about people. I just want to put the people that I thought were important in front of the right people. And that way, I really didn't get in trouble. But I was kind of like working under the woods. And then when someone got hired, I'd say, hey, we got this guy over there. And then they'd be all happy about it. And that's all they wanted to hear.
Did you tell your students that this was going to be a perpetually learning career, that they were going to have to go to continual education?
Yes. And that's the thing with electricity. I teach you how to do a voltage drop test last week, and I ask you this week to do it. You can't do it. You got to keep this stuff. You can't just do it once, demonstrate the ability, and walk away from it. And that's the way your career is going to be. Electricity will always be the same, but how we use it in the car is going to be different. And if you stick with these basics, and I'm just showing you the basics, you'll be amazed at how much technology you can fix just knowing the basics.
And now, as you observe with bolt-on technology, and you're probably in front of shop owners all the time, what's the value of best practices in a business?
There is no number or value you can put on it, because they're just very basic skills that everyone should be performing on a daily basis, customer to customers, tech to tech, whatnot, that are going to enhance the experience for everybody from the top of the food chain to the bottom of the food chain. And what is a best practice? A best practice is just basic things that you should do every day. You should brush your teeth every day. That's a best practice, because that way you don't get cavities. But now when you have a customer and you're finished with them and you got the bill, you want to go over what you did and you want to show them what you're recommending that's coming up. And that's going to set them up for the next visit. Reminding them of phone calls, having a face-to-face conversation, walking out to the car and interviewing them by the vehicle that you're actually going to work on. That's a best practice.
I'm talking with Jonathan Jacquelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So, Jonathan, how does a service professional get the guru on the go van to their shop?
There's a couple ways. We do what we call cold calls, where we go around and just visit shops based on geographics. And there's also times where we team up with outside sales reps from other parts distributors and visit the shops on that basis.
So I love this. You pull into a shop on a cold call, they see the van, and they're probably excited to see you.
Yeah, I've had a couple shops where they've actually have already heard of the gurus via Facebook or social media. So when I show up, they've already been signed up and taken online classes. And now that the van's there, it's really easy to book a lunch and learn.
So you're really an extension of the Garage Guru training centers.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all done with your lunch and learn. You spend 45 minutes to an hour. Probably that's all you can really get from a busy, busy shop. What are the technicians saying about your shop visit?
Oh, they love it. They thank me, you know, every second I'm walking out the door and just can't wait for me to come back again.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Because of the profession that you're in now, and this whole, if you will, digitized portion of what we do, you still can't forget that good old homey customer relationship piece. And you just mentioned, walk them out to their car. Do you see enough of that being done?
No. It's a big experience where a person has to walk in and find you. Then they have to stand on the other side of the desk. And we have the paper all over the place. We got the guns and all that stuff in the background. And they're in an environment that's totally alien to them. And it's got smells and stuff like that. And what's worse, we're talking about that vehicle that's out on the end of the lot. And I'm not even looking at it. So something the customer might bring to my attention could be very easily addressed by going out to the car and go, oh, this is a piece of cake. I can fix that for you. Your wiper's falling off because it's not clicked in. And that piece there is what's going to make the difference. Those shops that are keeping them inside are the ones that are going to lose.
It seems that people want to share additional things they know about their vehicle. And if you can have a chance to capture that information and then write it down in the file, you continue to prove to your customer how important you are in the relationship with their vehicle.
Definitely, because you're listening to them. A lot of times people in the field don't listen. And so the customer comes up to you and says, my car is doing this. It makes a creaking noise, for example. All right, so this is a true story. I was working in a dealership and customer came up, the car makes a creaking noise. So as I go out to drive the car with the customer to see what the issue is, I'm expecting kind of a creaking noise. Well, don't you know, I get in the car and make the turn out of the driveway and all I hear is whoosh. The sound of water moving behind the dash, the creek flowing by. So can you imagine if I never went out to that vehicle with that customer, what would I be looking for? Follow me. I would be looking for not a water sloshing back and forth sound. And that's part of what's really important about going out to the car and just talking to the customer.
John, best practices of the future are going to be all about setting future appointments. Am I right?
Definitely. We fall down. As an industry, we fall down. Hey, here's your sticker. Put it up on the window. Hope you come back. We don't really do a whole lot. Yes, we have people that go look in our records and communicate and send emails and stuff out. But why not make it live? Why not make it real? Where now the customer's set up that they know that they're going to come back when their car needs it, not 5 months, 5,000 miles from now. And we're going to send a reminder text a week in advance. That reminder text, because everyone's carrying their phone, is going to pop up and go, wow, that customer right then and there can hit the letter C and send that back and confirm that appointment, which starts a whole nother series of events if the shop's doing their job. Or the customer can call back or send a text saying, I can't make that time. Can we set it for another time? You just drove them back. I mean, think about that. You go to the dentist. Don't they call you the day before? Hey, you have an appointment tomorrow? When you go to the doctor, you get the same thing. And know what? They even charge you if you don't show up. We can train customers. Then that's one of the things that shops are afraid of is training customers. We can train them.
If this needs to be an important best practice of the future, how do we really make it constitution inside of our business? How do we make it a firm policy? What do we do about it?
That's where it all starts. If you adopt our software or any digital software, you have to make the commitment to use the software as it was designed. You have to make the commitment to put things in place. I mean, I remember being in a dealership when the first computers come in, everyone's writing stuff down and they took all the paper away. So that's the big thing. If you don't make the commitment that if I follow this software and I do what it tells me to do, my customers are going to come back automatically. And that, I think, is the real big point there because it's all happening as it should. For example, oil changes aside, there's other services that need to be repeated on your vehicle. And many times as the service advisor is smack in the middle of everything, trying to get things done, answer the phone and all that, he still or she has to remember to put them in the recommendations for future. Well, our software automatically does it. The digital software does it all by itself. So now you're actually creating appointments, not only for the oil change that's coming up in 5 months or whatever. If I put a set of struts on there, the OEM says 5 years, 50,000 miles. I have set the reminder for that in the calendar today. That's really big. Not only are we doing appointments today, but we're moving them out possibly for years.
So wait a minute, you're setting the appointment, but yet you're not telling me that in 50,000 miles, we're gonna ding you, if you will?
Let me try this. We just put new struts in your car today, Carm. And here's the thing. The OEM says that you're good for 50 years, 50,000 miles. We put an appointment reminder out there to let us know to remind you that it's probably time to get them done. The flip side of this, too, is that every other job in between that and now, we're going to get you prepared for it before it happens. So your trans service gets done every 50, 60,000 miles. We're going to prepare you for the next one 50, 60,000 miles down the line.
All I can think about is I give the dentist permission to book me, you know, I'm doing a six-month program. Some people do more, some people do less, but they have my permission to reach into their calendar, pick a date, and I usually say, I don't know. I don't have my calendar. It's too far out. Book it. And then as it gets closer and they start sending me these reminders, then I see how well it fits. Even though I book it on my calendar, you know, I do. They give you all the software tools to click on Outlook and put it in there. I've given them my permission. Is our hesitation as an industry about going over, just like you said, look at in 5,000 miles, as we predict, we're going to set an appointment and we're going to send you a notification on it. Now, if you can't make it, we'll work around that, but we would rather feel comfortable that you don't forget about this critical maintenance reminder. And are you okay with that? And can we do this for all the critical maintenance? Obviously, Mr. Customer, Mrs. Customer, you want this car to last. That's why you're here. We're working on that with you. We're a team. Let's set up this stuff. They say yes. You've got full carte blanche to set the switches in the software and go. Is it that easy? Or what are you telling your clients they have to do?
It's that easy. When I do webinars and things of this sort for our software, this is the way I set up that interaction between the customer and the shop. This is the first time in that they're using this digital technology that we're going to use texting for. I would walk out to the vehicle with a tablet as I'm speaking to the customer, literally send a text right to their phone. And know what they're going to do? They're going to look at it. And it's going to have all my shop information right there. And they're going, wow, you just sent that to me from your tablet? Yeah, I did. And here's the thing. We're going to be contacting you through text. Is that okay? Now, if the customer says no, you're done. But the customer goes, no, I like that. Well, we send a V card, a digital card to their phone. So they just do a couple taps and all my shop information is now in their contacts. So today, Mr. Customer, as we're working on your car, if we have any updates or questions, we're going to send you a text. Now that you've got our information, you'll see JB Automotive come up. And you know to get back to us. You know what? You want to have that car back 5 o'clock tonight? If you respond to that text, yes or no, we're going to get things done faster. And by the way, we now will calculate when your next change of oil or some other services are due automatically and send you a text reminder. So you see it come from JB Automotive that you're due for your oil change. Just hit the letter C and send that back. And guess what? You've just solidified an appointment. There's another flip side to this. The shop that uses the software, and this is what I used to do as a service advisor because I did that also. I always looked a couple days ahead to see what kind of appointments I had scheduled. Well, if that letter C comes back, the word confirm shows up on an appointment, I can see what's due that day and pre-order the parts. That is an industry change because what do? They pull the car apart in the bay, then they get their local parts house and hope they can get the parts over them. These parts houses are back and forth all day, every day. Can't we save them trips? So customer confirms, I see that appointment, air filter, micron filter, et cetera, et cetera. I call it my parts house. Customers confirm coming on Thursday. Can I have those parts? On his normal drive over for something else, he drops the parts off. Customer car shows up. The parts are already on the counter. You get work done. It's no longer putting up in the air and waiting for the parts to show up. The parts wait for the car. It's a win.
John, I guess if you talk to a supplier, they would be excited to want to work with you in that regard, knowing that you had a job coming in and they didn't have to do a 20-minute hot shot delivery. And again, for you, your downtime is more uptime.
Yeah, I mean, it's a win-win situation. And I know the parts house, there's another conversation that has to be had. You have that conversation with the customer about text. You have the conversation with your parts house. How would you like if I saved you a couple trips? It's going to maybe be a little more paperwork when the customer doesn't show up and take it back. But other than that, we're going to save you a number of trips and you're going to have the parts already. We're going to be good to go.
So status quo today is digital or not digital? I mean, where do you see the trends?
That's the other thing with the shops. Change is hard. And they're very busy doing their day-to-day, keep the head above water and whatnot, so they don't have enough time to start looking out at the other things. Digital's very slowly moving in, and the shops that do embrace it, the shops that do take it and do everything that they're supposed to do are getting trust from their customer, they're keeping the customers, they're building a history with the customer, and because they're doing all that, they're going to be successful to the customer, and they're going to have higher return on the repair orders. It's proven. We have the figures to show. We see what our shops do. We take a reading where they are before they start a software. We take a reading a couple months down the line, and there's always an improvement.
What are you seeing?
The average, and I even have a little trouble swallowing this, and that's how big it is 39% increase on the repair orders. That's sizable. I feel it's so sizable that when I talk to people, I usually say maybe 20. They don't like when I do that, but I would rather under-promise and over-deliver. And the software, when it works, works really well. I had a shop. I do the trainings here. Gentleman's been on the software for 4 weeks, and he volunteered to me. I didn't even ask. He goes, you know what? This is my first training. I've been using it on my own, and I've already saw a 10% increase. And I was like flabbergasted.
You and I spoke about the words good, bad, and ugly. The good and the bad and the ugly. There was a movie on that. And you said it's almost better than Carfax.
A digital inspection now has everything that Carfax has on it, but it has pictures. And the big difference with the pictures here, and this is one of the things that this is the transition from paper to tablet. On paper, I as a service advisor and a tech, I would just try to get that thing filled out and get it up to the desk and try to get it solved. So what happened? All the bad stuff. And customers would go crazy over that. And customers, hey, would you like to have a free courtesy inspection?
No way, man, because every time you do that freebie, it costs me a lot.
But the digital inspection isn't, there's not an option. It's, we do them all for every vehicle. Is that, you never ask the customer to do it. You just do it. It's part of best practices.
Best practices to get the customer's permission to do an inspection, be it paper or digital. That's my belief. I'm really big in communicating to my customers because like if they come in with something that's normal, I'm going to tell them it's normal. I can't fix it.
But wouldn't you just put in a DVI system and do it for every customer and then send them a text or an email and it say basically, hey, we started something new. We want to share it with you. This is how it's going to be. Every time you come in, we really do a full cardiac review of your car.
Well, here's where that situation doesn't work. You have a customer that comes in for the oil change. They don't want the wheels off or anything. If you go around that car, pull those wheels and do an inspection, they have legal ramifications to go because you went over and above what you were supposed to do. I've actually had customers very distinctly just change the oil, put a new filter on there, and get it out of here. I went and pulled it up.
You need to listen to the customer, but is it state by state that that says that?
I've been in Pennsylvania all my life, so I can't really answer that accurately.
If anyone's listening, carm@remarkableresults.biz is my email. Love to have you chime in on that. That's something very interesting. And you know what? I guess I would love to do a town hall academy on this and find out what best practices are with shop owners that have instituted DVI.
Well, the communication up front. I think that intro that I did earlier with the customer driving up on a lot and having that one-on-one is where it all starts. And at that point, you see we're doing these tablets, we're doing these new inspections now. And what we're going to do is not only we're going to take your car apart and note what we find, and the technician's going to do it all where it's going to be very clearly stated, we can now also take photographs of everything in your vehicle. And those photographs are going to make this much better than a Carfax report, because now not only do you have the services, what was done, what was found, what was replaced, you have photographs to show the whole process. So, and we have that forever. It doesn't go away. So the flip side of this, Carm, the average age of a car is 14 years old. If I can persuade a customer to stay with me from day one or whenever they come in and keep going and doing all these inspections, didn't I just generate this beautiful history of their car, including photographs, that they can get a copy of sent to them digitally and then use it to sell their car?
Powerful tool, powerful piece of engagement. And, you know, the thing I like about it is if you can explain that, sell that to your customer, why would they go anywhere else knowing that they have this home, this repository of information? Now, of course, they could, if they had three shops all doing digital vehicle inspections, they could go to each one of them and say, send me your pictures. I understand that. But we're always looking to connect a long-term loyal customer. And I see that DVI is one of those great tools today.
It sure is, because here's the thing, and this is what gets me. When I got in this field, I never wanted to sell somebody something they didn't need. And unfortunately, it happens. Well, now at the digital inspection, there it is in color. Do you really need that part? You don't need that part. And also, I've heard service advisors in my travel say, I no longer have to walk out into the shop and check Billy's vehicle because I'm afraid he's overselling something. I just look at the inspection, and there it is. So it kind of pulls everybody up to the level of trust that they need to be. The customer gets that. And that clearness of the whole thing, the transparency, is definitely going to make sales easier.
So what do you think's holding back shops from taking the plunge?
It's tough out there because you're going to have to make some very major changes in the way you do things. You're going to have to learn that though it seems to take longer up front, it's actually going to save you time later. And if you invest the time in setting the software up and whatnot, it's definitely going to work right away. Trying to fit that in with your day where you're trying to get from one car to the other is very difficult. And because a lot of shops, and I don't like the term, are doing the fire drill, they got themselves so underwater that it's near impossible for them to add new things. And because of that, that makes it harder. And also, as I said earlier, change is really difficult. This is the way we've always done it. And I've heard that time and time again. It works for this. It works. But the thing is, I remind these people is like, but you're still at the same place you were 10 years ago. Are you any better? If you don't change, you can't get better.
So besides technology, while you're out there, what else do you see shop owners struggling with?
The very basics. Now let's get back to the best practices. I've been to a number of shops. When I drove up immediately, I was impressed because the property's clean, the building's straight, there's paint, everything's done nicely. And then there's other shops that I'm aghast that I pull in and the weeds are out in the lot. The paint's coming off the building. There's dirt all over. There's kitty litter in the bays, all this stuff. And that to me is very basic because what happens is we get comfortable with where we are. So every day we walk into that dirty shop, we don't see it. But every time a new customer comes in, they see it immediately. It's a first impression. So going with that as the very basic best practice, I think is the easiest place to start. sweep the lot, pull the weeds, paint the building, and it's going to make a world of a difference. How many people drove by your shop today because it looked like a dump and didn't stop in? When you see the other shops that are really up on it, and there's one up in Massachusetts that was up there a while ago, while I was there, the technicians ran out of work. What did they do? They pulled out the leaf blower that they brought from home and a number of other tools and went out in the lot and cleaned up all the leaves. And I said, this is a shop that's going to succeed with our software because that's why we were there. And this is a shop that's going to succeed because it has people that care. That comes off when a customer drives in. And I think that's one of the most basic practices that everybody should do.
What's the learning curve to go DVI? I mean, are guys struggling not only to have all the technicians embrace a new way of communicating, have they found it a struggle just to implement new routines, technology, training, features?
I think the hardest part is getting them buy-in. The millennials, the people who are out there already know how to use an iPad and all that. That's all automatic. They can very easily know how to make it work, but now they have to learn where to go and what to do when they're making the inspection. And that's one of the things that we have to do up front. We need to let them play with it. We actually give them the software and everything and say, listen, we want you to work with it because when you get online with me, I don't want you trying to find menus because you've never worked with it. So we're trying to give them the time. And technicians, and me included, we got in the field because we took things apart and put them back together. So when we get into something like this and have that time, that's going to make it work for us a lot better. Once they invest that time there, and here's the other thing that I really try to tell them, Carm, is that when they're developing their own digital inspections, everybody should be involved. The guy up front in the office shouldn't be doing it. The technicians and service advisors should get together, develop these inspections, and every other week check in and make tweaks because it's going to make it even better. And when everyone buys in, then they're all on board. The next step would be the training. Once they get the training, they should be on their way.
Paperless. Is DVI paperless, or does the commitment to paperless have to be an entire strategy in the shop?
The DVI is not, you don't have to be distinctly paperless. We have actually had shops that asked us, even though they have the tablets and the technology, they still want printed paper because we all like that. I mean, there's many people that read a newspaper but never look on the internet for the news, read a book, et cetera. So we actually had a shop request that, and I thought it was kind of crazy, but you know what? We came through with them. They can print the tech worksheets instead of using the tablet and go around the shop and do all the stuff that they want. It's kind of a little backwards, but you know what? Maybe it's a stepping stone for them to move up to going fully digital. When they realize a couple taps instead of writing on a piece of paper and then copying it all back in the system, that might be what makes it work.
John, where are your big ideas coming from?
My experience of being in the shops and watching. I was very fortunate. I've had a number of people that let me do what I had to do, and I learned a lot from them. If I fell down, they made sure they talked to me and said, okay, what happened? Well, let's be careful next time. And what happens is because of that experience and keeping my eyes open, when I came on the bolt-on, for example, I wanted a few people to have actual experience in the field. So when they put something together, I say, whoa, 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 stop. That's a great idea, but you're not doing it the way the techs are going to be able to do it. You're not doing it in a way that the shop can benefit from it. You got to change this. For example, a lot of our online material was written really technical, not computer technical, not normal technical that we're dealing with. So one of the first things I did is I started jumping in and just rewriting this stuff. Yeah, you can go paperless. You can still stay with paper and do both, a combination.
Do you like what you're doing now?
Oh, I love this. I really do.
It seems to be a combination of being an instructor and being a technician. You've got to be just such a relatable guy to your customer.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot as a shop foreman in one of the shops. That was the favorite part of the job, is going out with customers and learning what they're looking for and finding out what it is. And now I'm here taking this technology from a lot of brainy guys that have really good ideas, and I want to say mold it so that the industry can use it. I want to put it out there where the industry can understand it. One of the other things that I did off the bat is they had 35, 40-minute videos. I produce what I call snippets, which are only about 40 seconds to a couple minutes long. The technician only wants to find out what he needs to do. So I'm building these things so the technicians understand. And being able to have that ability to relay that to people from what we have here, that's big for me.
What's one thing John Burkhauser has done that no one knows?
I've given assistance to people. I've done things for people without them knowing. I think that's the thing that I can talk about, because I see somebody in need or whatever. If I can help them, I'm going to do what I can. And if I see their true need and I can do something for them, I'll do that. So I've donated money, but I've had conversations to people. I said, you're not going to go and use this for something else. And where I feel comfortable, you know, that's someone that knows. But then sometimes behind the works, I'll do something through another party so people don't know.
You're a guitar player, huh?
Yes, sir.
Lead guitar?
Actually, because it's only a three-piece band, yes. There's three of us. I have a synthesizer, so I can play bass on my guitar. And my other bass, the guy who plays most of the bass, he plays a guitar with a bass line on it. So we actually flip back and forth. The drummer, he's standard old drums, and the three of us make a pretty big sound.
Just like ZZ Top, huh?
Yeah, I just don't have that beard thing going on.
So what is the director of educational programs? What are you really in charge of at Bolt-On?
Interesting question. Basically, my job is to try to get this information and how our software works. It's big. Our software is humongous. It does a lot. So how do we get this in front of people that can see the benefits of it right away? That's part of the big challenge. And that may sound like a sales side, but I'm not a salesperson. I'm a person that wants a shop to take our software, use it, and benefit from it. So my big thing here is in-house. I'm training all of our employees. We would have once on a Wednesday morning, like bring them in donuts and all that stuff, and I would take them through our products. So our people know exactly what happens. So if anyone calls anybody, they might be able to answer the question. The next step is developing the training. We have a Bolt-On University that we started, and I wrote the book for it, and I put it all together, and we've given three very successful sessions with another one coming. And also going out in the shops and seeing what they're doing and how they're using our software and bringing that information back to relay it to our staff so they can understand how to make or why to make changes.
So if you had to give a TED Talk, what would it be on?
I would definitely get into being yourself. How important it is just to go out there and do your thing. And know what? Who cares what other people say? The reason I'm here today is because I made a lot of right decisions and a lot of wrong decisions, because they do play into it. But I've been myself all my life. And here, they're allowing me to be John Burkhauser, or JB as they call me here. And they let me do anything. I mean, if I want to write, I write the blogs for them. If I want to rewrite the advertising, if I want to write the book, I just do it. And they let me do it.
It sounds like you're having too much fun, JB.
Probably, sir. And it's legal.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. I really learned a lot. It was an enlightening discussion. John Burkhauser, Director of Educational Programs, Bolt-On Technology. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Carm. I really appreciate talking to you and saying some stuff that has to be said.
Thank you, John Burkhauser, for paying it forward and sharing your wisdom exclusively for the Remarkable Results Radio podcast listeners. Hey, John was straight up and transparent in this interview, and that is a hallmark of the podcast. John has his own show notes page. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E239. And thank you for joining us and your support of the podcast. You know, I know you are finding a treasure trove of wisdom in the archive of episodes, and you now have the Town Hall Academy as a personal resource for your edification. So besides the Video Academy episode, every Academy is now released as a podcast episode. Go to remarkableresults.biz/learning. And every Podcast Academy is on your podcast listening site. Everything you could possibly want to know about the show and the powerful content is on my homepage. Stop by remarkableresults.biz and spend a few moments and do some research. And please share this content-rich resource with your friend. I'm grateful and thankful for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time,